Siana, hello. Welcome to the roadmap.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
How's it going?
All very well here in London. Started the day with sun, but it just go away.
Yeah, London always gets cloudy over the day. I spent a year in the UK, so I know what you're talking about. When we had our meeting in January, you were in Argentina.
Yes, indeed. I'm originally from there, and we recently launched in LATAM, starting with Argentina. So it was an amazing combination to see family and friends, and also be there for the business.
And now you're back in London to do more business.
Yes.
Okay. So today we're going to talk about your story, how you started a software company, actually, Cheers, a platform for creating contracts, managing contracts, and signing. How did you get the whole idea, you know, to have your own application and web app?
Sure. Well, as many founders, everything started with identifying there was a problem. And the problem we identified was, there are people still struggling with contracts. I'm a lawyer myself as a background, and I work for large corporations that struggle with this process. So I was sit down with them, explaining how to deal with this entire process from the offer to the negotiation of the renewal. Right. And I also work in a company that has a strong belief on data and the use of that data for different verticals. And I just thought, well, this is good to put these things together, data and contracts, to make a process that is simple for everyone and to celebrate deals. Because at the end of the day, it's something good that is happening to your business or your company.
So how do you actually managed contracts? Are you, let's say, as a digital law firm, how do you help people, you know, to create a contract and sign them?
That's a great question, because many people think that contracts are monsters, something difficult, that you really need to be an expert. There are contracts that definitely you do, and we do recommend getting an advisor for that particular case, for example, an M&A transaction. But every business that is doing well and scaling or is fully operational, it has at least 80% of their contracts that are all the same. So normally when you get on the speed with the business, you already have your services or products standardized, right? Let's think on a marketing agency. Well, the marketing agency that specializes on SEO will do copywriting, fixing the website structure, and consultancy. Okay, in the same way you have your services structured in a standardized way, you can do the same with contracts. So you know the terms you agree to, right? And then you can automate that process to simplify it, to get it signed faster, and to focus on what you really know what to do, which is helping the business. And of course, if you are on the business side, you definitely need to have the contract at the speed of the business, right? So when the client says, okay, send me the contract, you have it ready for its sending. But if you're on the legal side of the operations, you want to make sure the team is complying with the terms and your role is not at risk, or you have free time for focusing on the strategy. So at the end of the day, contracts are kind of the same, quite similar from any other jurisdiction, although you can customize through the platform. And that 80% that is repeating in terms of contracting, it can be standardized and optimized to reduce the time and to speed up the operation, basically.
It sounds a bit complex, and you're trying to make it simpler.
Yes, it's a process that is repeatable. So you can get a template that is trusted by an expert and then put the commercials in every new template you sign, right? Every time you have the same service, Well, you are changing, for example, the TAM, the pricing, and the name of the counterpart. But the contract, the terms and condition, what means for you to be binded by an agreement, it's always the same.
It sounds, it might be a bit abstract, you know, what you're saying, because it's difficult, you know, to visualize how everything's going to fit digitally in a contract with you being, let's say, intermediary. And what I actually want to ask you, to start developing something like that, you need an MVP. And you said when we had the meeting that having an MVP was really important to you to actually see how everything's going to function and how to, you know, to develop it further.
Yes. So there was a pre-MVP stage where we did everything manual using different tools from Google Forms to Power BI and signature providers. So that's how we validated that the same contract can work for a company based in Amsterdam, in Switzerland, in Spain, and Argentina, in the US. So we got over 50 clients to whom we helped with our contracts. Once we have that in place, then we put it into an MVP structure. I remember the first wireframes. I've done them with spreadsheets. It was very clunky, not funny at all. But it helps us to understand what was the workflow, right? From creation of the contract to sending for signature and then tracking some data. So you have a global overview of your portfolio. And so we launched that platform MVP last year after our accelerator. And we got 10 clients, right? We call them in the jargon early adopters, with whom we've been working for a year now, iterating the product. In the middle, we got a lot of product step back. We need to fix bugs. We misunderstood some of the needs from our clients. We thought one thing was great for them, but actually few others were more important to them. So hearing them, working closely with them, seeing the analytics from platforms was crucial for us to keep building, keep iterating, and keep fostering with our clients.
What you actually said, you know, with the MVP and having the first users is, I think pretty much every single guest that we had on the show mentioned, build an MVP, build something, you know, that can have the first users, and then build on that, you know, see where yes. What you did wrong, where you can improve, and what you can develop even further. Okay, so yes. how difficult was for you to understand everything? You're a non-tech person, so you're a lawyer. You finished the law school. So how difficult was it for you, you know, to understand what technologies you have to use? How did you have an in-house team? Did you outsource and so on?
So we firstly started with in-house. It didn't work. Then we moved to outsourcing. It worked. It got us out of the ground, which is the key of every founder journey. In any stage, right? You can have a very successful company, but you still have MVPs for things you want to try it out. Iterating. And if I had to pick one of the lessons from the many I had, was never wait more than 6 weeks to launch something, right? So you test fast, you learn fast, you fail fast, but you keep growing and try out things.
Why is the 6 week the time frame? How did you realize that you need to have, you know, that 6 weeks is the ideal time frame, you know, to have a minimal product?
Based on experience, I would say. at the beginning were different, like we moved to that 6 week, 6 months after we launched. We moved to recently, we were doing deployments almost every week with updates to new products or features. But now we are doing one deployment and we make sure everything is tested in a proper way. And for that is very crucial. I know perhaps people here in this podcast is not technical in the tech side as myself, and they will make a lot of mistakes as part of the journey. You need to live with that failure in every day's status. But launch fast, learn quickly, and keep iterating in a short period of time so you know what you're doing.
Did you as the app and everything progressed, did you decide or realize that you need to learn some of the tech yourself in a way that, you know, you need to understand what's going on? You know, why are you going to use this and not this? I can presume that you had to.
Yes. Yeah, so a friend of mine told me to use the latest technology for trying out MVPs, and I followed that advice. And then we kept on making mistakes with people and hiring. And at the beginning, we hired people because we felt we can work together on the ups and downs that every startup have. And lately, we are restructuring the team to more senior and talented. And of course, I can do driven attitude to be part of the team. Sometimes less is more.
True. What you just mentioned, we had, I can refer to one of our guests that we had, one of the first guests on our show. He's a tech advisor from Dubai. And we had the part where we were talking about, you know, the importance of having a good tech advisor, you know, to help you build your product. Because he said, you're going to have companies that are going to offer you to build an app for, I don't know, $20,000, and the other one's going to build it for $80,000, you know. So who do you trust? And he said, you know, sometimes, you know, the ignorance of those companies offering you, you know, coming towards you with low offers is quite interesting. You know, they just want to get the contract, get you as a client, but in the end, you know, they do complete something else and you lose time and money because it's not simple. Yes. You know, and I think you're pretty familiar with that, you know. But it's difficult to know, you know, as a non-tech person, who should you pick as your advisor or as a agency that can help you.
Yes, I think diversity brings always growth, and having an advisor that can oversee the operations from the technical perspective, in whom you can rely, trust, that is no judge and party, right? Is very important. We have an advisor that we are very happy with. And then it depends what to build. If you want to build an MVP, I'll suggest to have a small in-house team, because you will launch the MVP, you will learn, and then you will need to change so many things all along the way. And if you outsource that resource, then you will need to hire more hours to fix what was a misunderstanding or a bug or whatever is the case. And in that case, if you don't have a lot of funding, then you might run out of budget to keep building your product. But it happens something different when you already have an MVP and you want to try it something different, another MVP, or to get the MVP 2, or perform a migration to another different software that is more fast, more scalable. That happens to many companies. I remember you mentioned that was the case of GitHub, for example. So you are not alone. If you're a founder and you're realizing the product you built is not growing as the way you want to scale the business. So I think diversity is always the way to go.
Yeah, well, now that you mentioned scalability, it's one of the biggest issues, you know, companies have when they build a software. And all of a sudden, you know, you use one technology that can, you know, stand the current users, and all of a sudden, let's say you decide to invest more in marketing, and all of a sudden you have more users, but your servers, your technology can't handle that, and you need something else, something better.
Or, for example, to build something that is more sophisticated, such as machine learning or AI. Nowadays, you can integrate with ChatGPT, but there are some layers that you want to build in-house, and therefore, there are not any language that can support that. So perhaps you didn't build in a way that can work together. So it's always about iterating.
How do you use, you mentioned AI, how do you use AI? With your contract?
Well, we use AI for everything. I think it's a new Internet of Things. For the contracts to review and redraft is crucial because many of our clients are SMEs and do not have a legal in-house team, or the ones that do have a legal in-house, the person that is handling the contract is normally not the lawyer, right? So they don't know what to do. So they go to the self-service, and sometimes they receive a contract from the counterpart, and they want to know what this clause means, right? So they go to our integration with AI, and they click on explain me. So they have a high level overview of that clause meaning. If they want to go more in deep with this explanation, they can reach out to us and we help them on the way.
So AI is definitely helping.
Definitely. On our copywriting, on our emails, on our offerings, in every single aspect of the business. It simplifies how we work, although I don't think AI or any other technology will replace humans. I've heard somebody saying this, that AI needs to be trained, right? And if a person that is not intelligent is training the AI machine, then that AI won't be very intelligent at all. So you need to make sure you are training in a way that you can be using the outcome of the contract or the result. So
yeah, so AI is basically here to help you, you know, not to guide everything that's happening.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're gonna jump a little bit back. I remember when we had the pre-recording meeting, you mentioned that you got 300K in the pre-seed phase. How did you get that, and how did you manage all that money, you know, to get to where are you today?
Well, in Argentinian, I would say with sudor y lágrimas, sweating and tears. But essentially, we bootstrapped the company from the very beginning until we got early traction. We tested that there was a need from the market, and we needed more money to scale it, to secure the team, to secure a little bit of budget for them and to the product development and the prime level expansion. So we went out and we got investors based on this strategy, and happily we got it. So we use it for that.
And how big is the company now?
Well, we are seven of us working on a full-time base, and then there are advisors, mentors, and freelancers that are supporting in particular things.
Okay, what's the future? What's the roadmap of Cheers? Where is it going? Where do you hope it's gonna go? I mean, you probably have a lot of plans. And one of the things that we had our guests on the previous episodes, a couple of them said, it's a never-ending story. It's a continuous process. You always have to, you know, look how to develop your software further, because and you always have to adapt, you know, because markets always change. Users are looking for something new, and you always have to be there to meet their needs.
Yes. So I would say, as a results-driven person, our goal is to become a platform that everyone, commodity for negotiating contracts in a secure, easy, and affordable way. So we started looking backwards towards that mission, And then we started working on the product roadmap, right? And well, you have 18-month product roadmap with the main features you want to build to achieve that mission. And then another percentage based on what the actual clients really want you to build. And then that product roadmap is aligned with commercialization and any other marketing or sales strategy you have in place. But it's so good to be aligned. So everyone is on the same page, from the technical team to the marketing team, because everyone are part of the company and everyone needs to be doing the same journey.
What about roles? How did you decide, who's going to do what? How do you decide that? Because it can be, it's always difficult in startups, you know, everybody's doing everything. And at some point you have to set up processes.
Totally agree. Well, recently we split up with my co-founder in terms of roles. So he is still the COO, the Chief Operation Officer, but he is now playing the role of product owner, working closely with the technical team. And on my side, I'm still the Chief Executive Officer, being very closely with clients and being the product manager. So I hear what they say and I transfer that knowledge to the product owner, who digest this feedback and put it into the product roadmap in a more professionalized and organized way.
Yep. People always mix up, you know, product owners and product managers and project managers, and they're not the same thing. What I wanted to also ask you, when did you realize that, you know, you're actually getting some traction, that the company is doing something? What was the, let's say, the big turning point in your company?
I think when we realized we were having inbounds without doing any strategy, and there were people reaching out to us on LinkedIn or over WhatsApp, saying, hey, I came across of your profile or what you're doing. I have this problem at my company. We'd love to know more. At the beginning, we thought it was a casual thing. But then we started realizing the business was getting very serious and that we were doing something wrong. Because for experts, experts say that when you are being reached out from the client, it's because you are not talking to enough people. So that's how we knew that, well, one, the business was getting very serious. Two, we needed to be also serious with the processes. And three, we needed to get serious with the commercialization, right? And well, one thing led to another.
Now that you mentioned, I remembered, how did you manage the marketing strategy? Because a lot of company founders think, okay, I have a product now and it's going to sell it by itself. But that's not a reality.
No.
You also have to...
doesn't happen.
Yeah, you also have to work on your marketing strategy. So
yes.
How did you get around that? How did you work that out?
Yeah, so imagine you are very good at making empanadas, which is a very Argentinian meal, and you bake them on the weekend. Well, the guests won't show up by themselves, right? You need to invite them to try them out. Well, the same happened with the business and your technical product. So you need to keep it simple, because you need to know you are not an expert in every single field. So for example, in our case, we have two funnels that work very well. One is the outbound through LinkedIn. So we search them on tiers based. So we know which are the clients that are our sweet spot, the companies that we really want to work with, and also companies that really have that need. So we learned the band, right? Budget, authority, timing, and need. So that's how we qualify them. And based on that, we move forward. And the second funnel we have in place is social media. As a small business, we still having care of every single post you see on LinkedIn or our Instagram, Facebook, or our blog post. And so we take care of that from ourselves. We did not outsource it. So yes, at the beginning, we kind of underestimated the power of Instagram. For example, we had the idea that every client will come up with a request from LinkedIn. But that was not the case. And we got a partner very, very interesting from Instagram. It is a company considered as one of the big four. So that was Instagram. And so we stick with it.
That's quite interesting, getting a client, you know, through Instagram, because what you said, you're either get the clients through LinkedIn or, you know, through SEO by writing blogs or something else.
Yes, SEO really works and it stick with your company as the opposite of ads. Now, when you run out of the budget you assigned or the time is gone, then the ads is also gone, so you don't have any other metrics.
Yeah, you need to really be careful also with SEO. It's one of the most important things when it comes, you know, to marketing, when you're marketing your website, because somebody's got to type in company, digital contract, something like that, and you know, cheers can pop out in Google. Yeah,
electronic signature, CLM, contract management, optimizing contracts, and things like that.
What would be your closing thoughts? Actually, you know, what are the things that you had to learn the hard way? What are the mistakes that you made and that you would, you know, advise someone to look out for?
Yes. Well, the trill one is keep it simple. It's better to have few, but very good and good quality than so many with not track records. At the beginning, it's hard, but you need to do it in the forefront. So you need to go and talk. You need to talk the talk, the walk with the client, hear them, understand their needs, do discovery calls as many as you can, put that feedback down on a spreadsheet, try to analyze and be strategic, and then hire people that is senior and with a can-do attitude. Not everyone is ready for working on a startup, and a startup is a mess. And the good thing is we are hearing the client and we are very keen to solve their problems. And on the other way or the downside, we are not a corporation that will take years of getting back to the client or solving the problem. So if a founder is the person that is saying this, just keep it simple. Hire senior people that can do the work on an independent way. And then be at the forefront with all your clients, hearing them consciously and tracking all the data you can.
Yeah, so you can't know anything, everything. I mean, everything, you know, from the beginning. You learn as you go. And that's
learn as you go. Yes.
Yeah, and that's, you have to accept that.
Yes. You also need to accept you are not good at everything. So if you're a perfectionist, work on it, because it's not going to lead you anywhere.
Couldn't agree more. Luciana, thank you very much for being our guest on the roadmap. Good luck with Cheers. And I hope you scale, that you get a lot of big clients, big corporations, and that your company becomes one of the biggest in the world when it comes, you know, to digital contracts.
Thank you so much, Sal, at The Code for having me, and for those listening and feeling described by these issues, these problems, please reach out. We are here to help.
Okay, thank you very much. See ya.
Thank you. Bye-bye.